Before we begin this week's episode, I have a favor to ask. First, please subscribe to our podcast. There is a new article that will remain on the front page of Corn Nation on how to do that if you are not familiar with podcasting. Second, please give us feedback. I would love to hear your ideas about what you would like to hear about, people I might interview, or things you might be interested in. Thank you.
He's already been dead and it's messed with his head. It's John's post-life crisis.
Welcome to John's post-life crisis. I am John Johnston, founder and manager of CornNation.com, your Nebraska Cornhuskers site of much fun. This week, this episode, we welcome Ramsey Nasrallah from the Ohio State Buckeye site, 11 Warriors. How are you doing today, Ramsey?
We're closer to football, so I'm doing a little bit better than usual.
So I looked at your site, and it says you are the executive editor and director of business development. Does that mean you are in charge? You're the guy?
It means I'm one of four guys who has equity in the site and just trying to advance what's become a labor of love that also has a whole bunch of full-time employees. So we have a lot of fun with the site. The site does very well. I write once a week, and I help make sure that our writers all come across exactly the way that they want to.
So how long have you guys been around?
I founded in 2006. I've been writing about Ohio State football since 1997. Before we came up with the word blogging, I wasn't quite sure what I was doing. I was just kind of writing, putting my feelings on a screen and putting it on the internet, and eventually got called blogging. And so 22 years now of writing about teenage gladiators as a source of fun. I don't really golf, so this kind of takes the place of that.
Wow, that's quite of an experience. Before we get into Ohio State football, I do want to ask you this. In Nebraska, we have two major newspapers that cover the Nebraska Cornhuskers, the Lincoln Journal Star and the Omaha World Herald. And there's a massive amount of media coverage. So Nebraska is a small state, but still, as my site goes, it's like you're fighting a big space for, trying to be a bigger fish in a fairly decent sized pond. I mean, Columbus, Ohio, you guys have the Columbus Dispatch that hasn't gone out of business yet, right? I mean, what's the media like there?
So Columbus is now the 14th largest city in the country. It just passed San Francisco, I think, this year. There's a combination of old media, and you mentioned the Dispatch, which is owned by a conglomerate, like other brick and mortar newspapers have been gobbled up. They have dedicated coverage. There are like SB Nation, where Corn Nation resides. There are systems that have independent dedicated team sites. And then there are independent sites like 11 Warriors, where there's no agency. It's the owners run the site and the shareholders are us. We're not part of a larger system. We do have some affiliate sites, but on a much smaller scale than the thing that would be in the same universe as SB Nation. In terms of competition, we have dedicated beat writers, photographers, we coverage across revenue sports and non-revenue sports. And I think what's made us successful is just having a differentiated voice, and not just being the voice of the fan, but being the voice of the insider, being the voice of the reporter. Sometimes we have to report on news that our readers don't want to read about. If you remember a year ago right now, Ohio State's fall camp was dominated by a former wide receiver coach, and what his superior knew or didn't know about what was happening in his house. People hated that, but we hated covering it, but there's some things you got to do. You can't just cover the stuff that you like. Sometimes you have to cover the stuff you don't like. So I think people trust what 11 Warriors delivers to the Ohio State fandom experience. We just try to do it in a clever, funny, and informative way.
It's been a while since Mr. Smith went off on Twitter.
Oh, he's still doing it. Don't worry.
Is he?
We don't cover all of his tweets, but yeah, he had some transfer portal takes a couple weeks ago. I don't. It's out of my purview. It's not something that I try to cover. It just every now and then it sort of bubbles up to what I'm looking at, but I don't get involved in it.
Okay, let's get into this Buckeye team. that is got like a new shine, a new look. You have a new head coach, Ryan Day, right?
Yep.
You have a new defensive coordinator, Greg Madison, who came over from Michigan. What do you guys actually expect out of this season?
It's pretty interesting, right? So it's definitely whenever you have a change in the regime, and I've been around for a while and seen this happen a few times. We haven't had a true season like this one since go back to Tressel's first year, 2001, because when he left in 2011, it was an interim situation and it was an assistant coach, and it felt like nothing felt right that whole season, including the buildup. No one really wanted to accept that was a true change. A year later, Urban Meyer gets hired, and he's coming into a postseason ban season. So there's excitement, but at the same time, you're like, this is just like a scrimmage season. This year, there's nothing holding them back. I feel like they did the succession plan the way that they wanted to. There's no lingering issue. No one was fired, which that's the first time in my life that an Ohio State coach wasn't fired and it left on his own volition. You can debate how Tressel left, but he was, you know, he resigned, but you know, he was kind of told to resign. So this is an interesting season in that context, in that frame. Last August, I mentioned, you know, when Urban Meyer was suspended and Ryan Day was running a fall camp, and then he actually coached the first three games. That was Ryan Day coaching Urban Meyer's team. That was Ryan Day running Urban Meyer practices, preparation, culture. All of that was, he was the substitute teacher, so to speak. This is now Ryan Day's program, and he's already made some changes to the cultural bit. Urban is very intense, still is very intense. Ryan Day has created a much softer, more like leaning into the whole idea that it's a family. They've always been very good at the brotherhood and the bonding, but Ryan Day is there almost as like a surrogate dad for a lot of those players. And he doesn't make any real reservations about making sure that that's front and center. It's aided in recruiting prior to him taking over with players who may not have been a great fit for the Urban Meyer culture. I know that they got a couple of players specifically because of what Ryan Day did in contrast to what Urban did. And I'm not diminishing anything Urban did, because he's a Hall of Fame coach who, if he would have kept going, would have had like Newt Rockne level of numbers. It's insane what he was able to do at the age of, he's in his early 50s. But this year is unlike any other, because you've got a seamless transition of power. A guy that's a bit of a prodigy from an offensive strategy standpoint. And like you mentioned with Greg Madison, there's actually two coaches that came from Michigan to Ohio State. And so, I mean, there's just a lot of subtext about what that means, especially when you're poaching coaches from a team that you put 62 on.
You like saying that, don't you?
I'll never get tired of saying it. It's, you know, as a Cavs fan, it's like my new Warriors blew a 3-1 lead in the 2016 NBA Finals. Ohio State scores. Did you guys know that? Nebraska fans, did you know that Ohio State scored 62 points against Michigan, the number one defense in the country?
I was shocked. Yeah, honestly,
you can look it up. It's on the internet.
I of course, I'm an old crusty man, okay? And I watched college football when I was a kid, and that was Bo versus Woody, right? We didn't have all the TV and we didn't have all the games but Ohio State Michigan was on every year. It was like Nebraska Oklahoma. It was a game you had to watch if you were going to be a college football fan. Right. So,
and those games were like 10-10, 14-10, 21-14. They were like, you could predict the score. It'd be very close every year.
Yeah. 3 yards and a cloud of dust.
That's right.
And so, yeah, 62. I was very shocked by that. It was shocking that you guys did that to their defense.
Well, they played a lot of man defense, and Ohio State went five deep on the receiver side. So would you believe that the fourth receiver was always being covered by a special teams gunner? And Dwayne Haskins is, you know, throwing touchdowns in the NFL now. So that in hindsight, you're like, this could be a problem. But as it was happening, I was in disbelief too, especially since they had just beaten Maryland 52-51 6 days earlier. Like, oh gosh, this is.
And then you had the Purdue game.
Right, which we've deconstructed that a few times. They've had a couple of those the last couple of years. The one, and it's always on the road against Big West teams, which is a good transition into talking about Ohio State going to Lincoln this year. I think a lot of it, at least, you know, everyone's got their own opinion. There's a expression, and it's actually one of Ohio State's drinking songs. We'll win the game or know the reason why. So diagnosing what happened in West Lafayette last year and the year before that in Iowa City, when you don't lose that many games, you dwell on the losses, right? So Ohio State's lost 3 games in 2 years. They finished third in the final poll last year and fifth in the one before that. So you have to talk about Purdue and Iowa. And at Purdue, they would just looked crappy most of the game. They were committing a ton of penalties. I wrote about it this week on 11 Warriors. In those 2 games, they committed, I think, almost 20 penalties and about 200 yards. And it wasn't just that, you know, it wasn't like holding or offsides. It was like the Purdue game was even when they roughed a punter. And Purdue kept possession as a result. And they scored a touchdown and the game was over. Ohio State just like emotionally fell apart. At Iowa, the game was even. Ohio State was moving the ball however they wanted to. And Nick Bosa got ejected for targeting. And it wasn't just like, you know, targeting is controversial because it's no one knows what targeting is. but Bosa jumped up and like headbutted Iowa's quarterback in the face. And, you know, there are Ohio State homers be like, that's a terrible call. But like, if you know the rule book, like I think everyone agrees that was targeting. When he got ejected, everything we know about 55-24, that game in Iowa City, that's when it started. So it's, I think there's an element of fragility and it's based on discipline.
I think I still remember a tweet you made during the Iowa game in which you said, I congratulate Kirk Ferentz for sitting on this game plan for 20 years.
the stretch plays and the throws into the flat and just making them run. It was very clever. Also, you probably know this as a Nebraska fan. Iowa goes like 17 deep at tight end. So it like that was a tough day to be a weak side linebacker.
Okay, here's the question for you. And I did read that article about the penalties, and I thought, wow, you guys have committed massive amount of penalties. Is that something you're looking for that to change under Ryan Day?
Last in the FBS, and it wasn't close. And in 2017, they were 120th in the FBS. They added 200 yards of penalties and 19 flags to the same number of games in 2018, and they finished third in the country, and they couldn't run the ball. So if you're wondering like how talented Ohio State is and how volatile and undisciplined, that's all you need to know. If they commit an average number of penalties, they're in the playoff. And even with some of the optics being so bad for how they play defensively, a lot of what they did, like with Purdue, mistakes made them look worse on the defensive side of the ball, especially.
Okay, I have to ask this. Is this a year Jim Harbaugh finally breaks through, because you guys might be in a rebuilding or refining time?
No, it's not.
That was really short.
Right.
It's because you don't want to say his name?
No, I can say Jim Harbaugh all day. I mean, I'm an old crusty guy too, so I remember booing him when he was playing in Ohio Stadium during that 1 year where quarterbacks could stop the game for crowd noise, and he did it like 9 times during the game. He'd be under center, the crowd was super loud, and he'd be like shrugging, like, I can't hear anything, and the refs would stop the game. And I think the NCAA figured out how stupid of a rule that was based on that. It was the Jim Harbaugh rule cancellation. Because it's basically you can go into any hostile environment and eliminate the home field advantage by forcing the crowd to shut up so you can pretend you can't hear your center. Anyway, I could say Jim Harbaugh all day. I don't think it's a talent thing. There's talent and scheme, but ultimately it's how those teams approach the rivalry and approach the game. And I think Ohio State has a much more pragmatic and healthier view of what it means to play in that game than Michigan does. And it's not something that Harbaugh created. He played for Woody Hayes Light. A lot of what he brings to coaching comes from that experience. He is Jim Harbaugh's technically a descendant of the Woody Hayes coaching tree. because he got the guy that carbon copied everything that he learned when he was in Columbus. But when it comes to the rivalry, I think the runway that was created by Jim Tressel and continued by Urban Meyer has created a bit of flux. And you saw it last year when Michigan came into the final game of the season with all the momentum plans for Indianapolis. I got my hotel room in Indy from a Michigan fan who had already planned to go. I mean, which I don't think was too big of a stretch for them to expect to be there. And they lumped in Ohio State with Wisconsin, Wisconsin, Penn State, all the teams that had beaten Michigan in 2017. They put Ohio State on the same sort of slate, like in this revenge tour. And people think like bulletin board material doesn't matter. Michigan was annihilated because of the revenge tour. And then also because Ryan Day schemed Don Brown's ass off. But like I think that hasn't changed for this year. I don't think that Michigan's going to figure out how they respect a rivalry and how they approach it. They're going to go in angry, hot, like upset, a lot of energy like they did in 2017 in Ann Arbor. They might jump out to a lead and they're going to lose again.
That's pretty confident.
I don't have a lot of anxiety about it. I totally trust the cultural aspect of, and that's something that I'm pretty sure that Day will keep intact. And I've heard him talk about it behind closed doors at the Woody. So I don't think that that's something that you fix in one season, especially with the same head coach at Michigan. They're going to be wildly talented again. They lost a bunch of guys, but they've got incredible player development. And it's just a model program. I grew up fearing the evil empire, but the approach to the rivalry game, while it was on even par during Woody and Bo, and even during Earl and Bo, and then it fell off with Coop, Bo, Coop, Mo, and Coop Lloyd Carr, it is now uneven. The two programs approach that rivalry game in a completely different manner, and one is successful and the other one obviously isn't.
Well, I was going to ask you if there's any advantage to having coaches come over from Michigan, but I get the idea. Well, you've pretty much said that the difference is not really in the players or the coaching. It's in a cultural concept.
Greg Madison coached for Urban Meyer at Florida. He's actually responsible for my nightmare in Glendale, Arizona in early 2007. The whole game ended on the lines, Florida's defensive line and Ohio State's very entitled offensive line. So he has a little bit of insight into what he's stepping into. Al Washington's from Columbus, and I think a lifelong Ohio State fan. His dad played for Earl Bruce. He knows a little bit, but these aren't just like random hired guns showing up. There's a bit of familiarity with what they're getting into. From a technique, from a philosophy standpoint, Madison's coming in and Greg Schiano's leaving. And I think Greg Schiano's a great coach. I think he had a bad year. I think that he was Urban's support system and like informal life coach, even though Urban has a formal life coach. But from a scheme standpoint, bringing in Al Washington and Greg Madison is an upgrade over Greg Schiano and Billy Davis, who was the best man in Urban Meyer's wedding. You've got a lot. I think as someone who leads a couple of organizations, like this makes a lot more sense. I think they're stronger now.
So you got a new quarterback in Justin Fields. How did that? Dwayne Haskins was a sit in the pocket guy, and yep. Fields is not a sit in the pocket guy. How's that changed this season?
Well, towards the end of the year, you could tell that. Dwayne was being told, hey, you know, you don't like to run. And maybe it's because you genuinely don't like to run. Maybe it's because of self-preservation. But toward the end of the year, he was keeping the ball more and running. And he's a big dude, and he's got a long gait. So all someone like that has to do is take, you know, three steps, and he's got 6 yards. And so he was picking up yards against Maryland, against Michigan, against Northwestern, and also in the Rose Bowl. I think if you go back to the Nebraska-Ohio State game last year, there's a couple of GIFs you can find online where Dwayne like has like nothing but green to run. I mean, Nebraska's defense was, we don't have to talk about, you were there, you know how it was last year. But he's sliding with like no one within 10 yards of him. And I think that was the turning point. Justin Fields is like, he's like Diet Coke Braxton Miller, because no one's Braxton Miller. I think he's got the arm, and he's definitely got some getaway sticks. I just we've had Dwayne Haskins and JT Barrett, who is more of a not shifty but a great runner, We're pining for Braxton Miller, and people need to know that there's no such thing as another Braxton Miller. So Justin Fields will be the next best thing, someone who can command the pocket, but then also, you know, convert third and nines the way that Terrell Pryor did.
You guys got – you don't have a lot of returning players because you lost so many to the NFL draft, correct?
Not a lot of returning offensive linemen. And then a couple of receivers went to the NFL. But, I mean – running back last year was J.K. Dobbins and Mike Weber. Dobbins is back. It was kind of a split thing. A lot of the receivers are going to be familiar. They're going to be loaded again. These guys all got to play last year. There's only a few guys that are going to be getting on the field that didn't see any time last year. There's shadow starters and returning starters, and Ohio State has a bunch of the former.
Is there a Bosa?
they have a new... number 97 on the offensive line, who is like a 6'4" white edge rusher. So it's going to confuse people, but it'll say Potter instead of Bosa on the back. The defensive line is going to be, you know, a real pain in the ass for offensive lines again. Yeah. And Chase Young is back too. So it's going to be a lot of the same guys. Low key, the best defensive lineman I think they have, well, not the best, the most underrated, underappreciated defensive lineman they have is B.B. Landers. He's a very undersized three technique, like right in the middle of the defensive line. He ruins a lot of stuff that teams want to do. If Ohio State gets better linebacker play this year, that's going to be a much different story, because he was very disruptive up front last year.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis, because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
So how do you see this turning out? I mean, this season? Are you just waiting?
The schedule is, you know, the early schedule is not going to tell us anything, because I think the Cincinnati game is going to be challenging for a lot of reasons, familial reasons with Luke Fickell coaching it. But there isn't a marquee non-conference game in the traditional sense. I'm not diminishing what Luke has done at Cincinnati. There's no, I don't know, TCU kind of lost some luster. They had home and homes with Oklahoma. They've done it with Texas. They were supposed to have right around now Tennessee and Georgia, but both athletic departments decided to walk those back for some bad non-fan related reason. I think that the Big Ten schedule does not set up nicely for Ohio State at all. And we're accustomed to the landmines that the last couple of teams have had, where they lost to significantly under-talented opposition. And that is going to happen again this year, with Ohio State being the favorite team in just about every game. But they end with Penn State, Michigan, which is not ideal. They go to Northwestern on a Friday night, which just has spiders written all over it. You know, Pat Fitzgerald's going to let the grass grow at Ryan Field for like 2 weeks to try to even out the speed. And then there's going to Lincoln, which, you know, there's some Big West road trip trauma. I saw that Nebraska has black jerseys this year. There's a special uniform. I'm sure those will come out. I'm sure that'll end up being a night game. All of the bad juju is going to be there. So, you know, there's a thing that, you know, Ohio State fans think they can go undefeated every year. And over the last couple of decades, a lot of times that, you know, on paper, yeah, totally. It's all set up for them. This year, I think it's going to be what comes down to if they can reduce mistakes and not commit 116 damn penalties in a season, and some like just crucial, like brutal penalties, and stay emotionally intact, especially in when they're wearing the white jerseys and they're somewhere where the crowd hates them more so than usual. Yeah, I think that they can get through it. not unscathed, but just mildly scathed. You can't lose 55-24. You can't lose 49-20. If they lose a close game, I don't think that hurts them as much. But it's been so long since Ohio State lost a close game, I can't even remember what it would be. I mean, Iowa, Clemson, Purdue. The Oklahoma game, I think, was 31-16 after they had really beaten the crap out of Oklahoma and Norman. When's the last time Ohio State lost a close game? They either lose big or they win.
I had a question there and it went away.
That's all right. You'll figure it out.
Division alignment, when you look at that, what do you think about it?
Well, it's obviously out of whack. I mean, the Big West has never won a Big Ten championship game, and it's, I think, only been competitive like barely once. That Iowa-Penn State game was awesome. Other than that, I mean, hell, when Wisconsin gets there, they get exposed. And the neutral site thing does not help. I think the Big West has awesome environments, and it's also longer road trips, and they tend to do better when they're hosting. But when everyone goes to Indy, it just, you know, not anticlimactic. I've been a few times. My team has won the last two. It's been there a bunch of times, so that's good. But I don't think the alignment is weighted properly. I also don't think you should change it. I think that time ends up evening this stuff out. There's the way that momentum works. Someone will be up, then someone will also be down.
Well, because of let's face it, the Big Ten's been around for years. You added three teams lately. If you consider Nebraska lately, in the big scheme of thing, it is. You really can't move. You can't move anything out of the East. I mean, you can't move Michigan State apart. You certainly can't move Michigan-Ohio State apart unless you're just going to still have them play every year. Then why have a division alignment?
Right. They tried to do that with leaders and legends because they wanted Ohio State and Michigan to meet in the championship game. And that was like when Nebraska joined in 2011. So they figured that out. And by the way, the ACC is doing that too. They thought they could get Florida State and Miami to meet in every ACC championship game. That doesn't really work.
No.
It hasn't worked out. I don't know. You know, I haven't written about this in like 6 years because I just like it was very hot to write about in maybe 2012, 13. I just stopped caring. They split Indiana and Purdue, which that doesn't matter in football. And I spent time in undergrad at IU in addition to Ohio State. Like, they don't care. I mean, the bucket's a fun game. It's on during the Ohio State-Michigan game, so, like, only one state watches it. But that's one you can split. Basketball would be a different story. I don't know what you could do. I mean, all you need to know about the weights of the two divisions is that the Big Ten added Maryland and Rutgers and put them in the East, and the East is still better.
Well, that's a good point. Ouch. We're coming back. We got the guy.
you do. This is all true. I like just about everything the West is doing. And I mean, I even like Lovie Smith. I just don't know if the Illinois Athletic Department is up to doing things on a grown-up level when it comes to football.
They appear to not really care.
It's an odd part of the country, man. I don't know. I mean, you were talking earlier about how Nebraska is a geographically large state, but not a lot of people, two media companies. Central Illinois, that's not south of Chicago, man. That's like almost 4 hours away. It's not, you know, they are their own culture. It's like 3 hours from Indy, 3 hours from St. Louis. It's a horrible drive from Chicago. It's near nothing. So they don't have any, there's no real advantage there. And it's not its own state culture like Nebraska is.
Not even, well, they do a little bit in basketball, but I don't know, you could move Penn State over to the West, and that would be kind of, I don't know. It wouldn't, you know what they mean? The geographically, it wouldn't make sense, but it would be kind of a balanced thing. Penn State, Ohio State has a little bit of a rivalry there, don't they?
They do. But that screws Penn State because it's kind of like West Virginia being in the Big 12. Like, they're always on long-haul flights going to play anybody, whereas Penn State in the East, it's a road trip to Rutgers, Maryland, Ohio State. Even, I mean, the problem with Penn State is that it's in the Alabama part of Pennsylvania, so it's, you know, right between Philly and Pittsburgh. It's its own thing. It's got a stronger East Coast influence, though. It's not like Illinois, which just is its own self-contained deliverance spot on the map.
Penn State's hell to get to, isn't it?
It's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Center County is the sticks, man.
Wow. Are you going to the game in Lincoln?
I don't. I used to plan things like a year in advance. Now it's like Tuesday of the week. I'm like, you know what? I'll get a plane ticket and go. We have beat guys that go cover, so I prefer to not be in press boxes. I like to be with fans and be a fan for those 3 hours before I have to come up with content on what I just saw or what I'm about to see. So I haven't done it for a while. I have a good friend who played for the Omaha Nighthawks. It's been a while since I've been out there. It was actually Maurice Claret played for the Nighthawks when he was still playing football. I'd like to. I haven't had Runza in years, so I'm due for a trip.
Well, I plan on going to that game and hopefully shooting. I can find plenty of guys that will write for me, but I can't find a lot of photographers. And I enjoy being on the sideline, enjoy having a camera. I don't like being in the press box as much because then I have to actually socialize with other people sometimes, and best at that.
There's also reporter etiquette, and I'm not a reporter. I have journalism experience, but I'm not a journalist. I like yelling. I like when Joe Bowserman throws 10 balls into the stands at Memorial Stadium. I want to say something. I don't want to be quiet.
And they did. You know, they do that announcement at Memorial Stadium before the game begins that this is a professional or working press box, and there'll be no. Yeah, it's like that is a good point. You're like, well, who does this? What kind of automatons are you people? I thought, you know, I work in IT for a normal job. I guess journalists, maybe they train them. I never took any journalism classes.
The press sections are supposed to be there working. And if you make any noise, you're not working. You're cheering. You're a fan, and it's a bad look. So I totally get it. They could, by the way, they could stand to make that announcement at Penn State games in their press box, but they don't, and it shows. I appreciate what most press boxes and press row sections are like. You should be there covering the game as an objective journalist, even if you live and die with how the outcome goes.
Some of us are just incapable of doing that.
That's why I stay away from them, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Big Ten culture. I have to ask this question. Why at SEC games, when they're playing other conferences, do you hear the SEC chant? And Big Ten teams, they're not ever going to root for other. You didn't root for Michigan in the College World Series this year, did you?
Absolutely not.
Right. We It's a thing, I think, for Nebraska to still, you know, we've been around for a while, but I think we're still trying to figure out what is the Big Ten culture all about. Why don't Big Ten teams cheer for each other?
This is going to come across as condescending and arrogant, and I'm just going to root it in history. The Big Ten, we'll start with the original from the Western Conference to the Big Ten. Those are all individually successful, largely land-grant institutions that are self-made through state funding, through continuous improvement. Every Big Ten school has its own unique personality. This all also happened largely both pre-Civil War and then like with Ohio State, 1870. It's the 1800s. So the culture of the Midwest coming up through what became the Union and then post-Union and post-Bellum, they didn't aggregate against an oppressor. The schools of the SEC aggregate their pride. They aggregate their allegiance regionally, and it's rooted in what happened leading up to 1861 and ultimately what happened after 1865. This is still post-Civil War alignment. That's why you hear SEC chants, and there's no such thing as a Big Ten chant, not just because it would be kind of a clumsy thing to chant, but that's where that's rooted, and I'm convinced of it. There's a reason that Kentucky basketball fans are Alabama football fans. They just want to win something. You don't see Indiana football fans. The only thing that, and this is an odd outlier, Indiana fans will become Notre Dame fans, but they're in the same damn state. I get it. Everyone from Indiana likes Notre Dame at some point. It's part of what they do, but that whole just rooting for the Big Ten thing, it's rooted in history. And the other part of it is that ESPN has been very clever about aggregating viewing audiences and getting people with no reason to watch. Why would an Auburn fan be rooting for LSU? It's media trying to get more eyeballs too. So It's equal parts audience aggregation and equal parts American history.
I always thought that was the case, but you want to clarify your opinions or your perspective on something with somebody else. I would hope most people would do that, kind of like, scientists getting together and testing the same experiments and validating their data and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I mean, I try to go to an SEC game once a year, just because you want to have that diversity of experience. I love going to Columbus, but like you like to see how everyone else lives. I went to the LSU Ole Miss game not too long ago and spent a weekend in Oxford. Man, there's no bad experience down there, especially when you're going with no anxiety and you're just going to have fun and you're not living and dying with the outcome. It's great. So I'm not talking down or diminishing the SEC chant. I think it's silly and stupid, but I get where it comes from. And there are two things you can't choose in life. You can't choose your parents and you can't choose where you're from. If I didn't grow up in Columbus, I would have grown up somewhere else and I wouldn't root for Ohio State probably. When you're from a place and you come up through a culture, that's all you know. So I get it. I appreciate it. And I also, I'm kind of wired to diagnose it. And I think that's where it comes from, media and history.
Okay. I don't like to do really long podcasts, but we're coming to the closing. I do have to ask this question.
Okay.
Because it's the news of the week. What is all this stuff about you guys trying to license or trademark the word the or the?
It started with Ohio University and Ohio State. So it was an intra-state funded institution squabble. And the short version is that Ohio State's trademarking office the whole world sees what they're like now. They have come after my website. There's a reason that we don't use scarlet or gray in our color scheme. It's because Ohio State trademark lawyers like to think that they own the colors red and gray. So they think that there are people that would be confused that 11 Warriors is a wholly owned subsidiary of Ohio State, which it's not. So I think it's part. I think on its face, it's absurd. I get why they're doing it. I think it's tone deaf. There is a legal justification for why they would want to do it, however you want to say it, in the context that they're trying to trademark it. Not that long ago, it made a lot less noise. They tried to trademark OSU, and this may shock you, but Oklahoma State didn't like that at all.
Yeah.
And they ended up reconciling because, no one's going to confuse Brutus with a packing cowboy, right? So they're like, okay, this is clearly – they figured it out. The is a little bit different because it's the most common word in our language. So I think it's stupid, but at the same time, it's making all the best people upset. So as someone who appreciates trolling, I kind of like it. I kind of like that they're doing it.
And the Corn Nation, the name of the website came because at the time that I started, which is about 2006, 2007, we had an athletic director that was a megalomaniac, and I figured that he would get around to suing everybody that had Husker or Nebraska or anything related to Husker football in their website name. So that's why I went with Corn Nation, which is it's a really stupid name. It really is.
You can put nation on the end of anything.
Well, that's true. But I mean, when you look at Corn Nation, I mean, you search for Husker football. It took like 18 years for us to get any search. Let's look for a Nebraska site. Oh, that would be Corn something. No.
Right.
I got all sorts of stuff from corn people. Why isn't this website about corn? It was really dumb. But that's the reason why the name is what it is. I said this on our other podcast, and I wanted to give your marketing or your licensing department or whoever they are a lot of credit, because when I saw that they were trying to trademark the word the, I said, that is a brilliant marketing campaign.
I have a shirt that says just the on it, and it was some apparel brand that did it, and Ohio State couldn't touch it because they don't own the. But if you're wearing a shirt that's red and has block print that just says the on a game day in Columbus, people know exactly what it means.
Right. But and the thing about it is it came out, somebody wrote an article on it, and then it exploded all over the place. I mean, they got free advertising. yeah, for $0.
And people get wound up. I mean, I still think it's stupid, but like Penn State is the Pennsylvania State University. There's Ohio State's not the only the school. There are plenty.
I don't think we've ever said that about ourselves, but I think in Nebraska, there's University of Nebraska, Lincoln, University of Nebraska, Omaha, and then there's this University of Nebraska, Kearney, which used to be Kearney State College, but they upgraded it apparently because when I went to school, Kearney State is where you went if you were going to be like drunk all the time.
Versus
not
Lincoln.
Just drunk. Yeah, versus like 3 days drunk in Lincoln.
Right.
You know, I mean, you went to Kearney State because you were really not going to do like engineering or anything like that.
So this is what Nebraska should do. You take University of Nebraska, Kearney, and trademark UNC and see what Chapel Hill does about it.
There you go. All right. Anything else? Anything else you want to say?
No, I'm glad that Nebraska found the right guy. Nebraska is a lot more fun to watch now. This wasn't a hindsight thing. I think Nebraska hired Mike Riley right around the time Ohio State was beating Wisconsin 59-0 in the Big Ten Championship. So it was like a side. By the way, did you know that Ohio State scored 59 points on Nebraska, or not Nebraska, and Wisconsin in Indy and shut them out? You can Google that too. But you are hiring a bad retread coach, and not hindsight. Nebraska was lost in the wilderness for 3 years with that. And I get that Bo Pelini, who I got to watch play in college, needed to go, but man, you got to find a better rebound than Mike Riley, and I think he finally did.
Yeah, when he was hired, we all did this article on, you know, what we thought of the hire, and I specifically wrote, we shouldn't get too crazy about this. If he's successful, then he's successful. If he isn't, he'll be fired in 3 years, and we won't have to give him a big payout.
Right. So you hired a 5-7 coach.
Yeah, we did.
Like that's not okay.
I mean, when you hire somebody or when you get a new coach, you're always hopeful.
Right, but at least he was like 63. So there's that.
All right, we're gonna say wrap it up, and I thank Ramsey for being here. It's been nice talking to you. I think this went pretty well.
Likewise, man. Have fun this season.
Yeah, I'm gonna wish you good luck with your season, but not that much good luck. But, okay, this has been John's Post-Life Crisis. I thank you for listening, and I hope you all have a good week. Goodbye.